AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Welcome to the Mostly Pod Out at Night. Mostly, I am Graveyard, joined by my co-host Salem.
Hello.
This is episode 155 of our weekly All Things Horror podcast. Yes, we are back. And yes, Salem is in fact alive. And we are celebrating the dog days of summer by going back to camp. Camp Crystal Lake, or, you know, Camp Blood for all you hip people out there. And we are doing the biggest horror franchises all month long. We'd be starting with the first Friday the 13th films before they started having just ridiculous taglines and not really even having Friday the 13th in the title anymore by the end of it. Not every franchise. Halloween's always been Halloween. There's never been, you know, Michael Myers, you know, Revenge on Haddonfield type titles like that. Everything else.
I mean, there was like H2O.
It was Halloween H2O, but yes. But I mean,
It was Halloween 20th anniversary. Yes, I know. I'm just saying, like, H2O was the title of it.
Yeah, I mean, because it feels like every other thing out there just eventually just starts just calling it the villain's name. Freddy's, you know, Freddy's Dead or Leatherface.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's because that's what people are calling it anyway, I think. They're just, like, going with the...
That's fair.
Going with what the people are saying.
That's fair. I guess now technically never had, like, you know, Pinhead's Revenge, so that's good. As always, Hellraiser should not have been made, is the tagline. But I digress. All right, we're going to start off with the original Friday the 13th from 1980. And for anyone who has seen Scream, you know who the killer is already. That's right. It's not Jason Voorhees. I think a lot of people get really confused when they go back and watch this one the first time, knowing that Jason's the mainstay of Friday the 13th, but he's not really in it.
Right. Well, yeah, because by the time I watched this first one, like, I hadn't watched any of them, but I was, like, very aware of the film. And, like, I knew who Jason was. Like, you know, I know, like, the iconic killer, the hockey mask. You know, like, I knew who he was. So when I went back to, like, oh, I'm going to watch the whole franchise, and I watched the first one, I was, like, genuinely surprised that it wasn't Jason. You know what I mean? Like, because he's the iconic person, so you assume he's the killer in every other movie. Like, every other franchise works that way.
Yep.
This is the only one that's like, yeah, the first one does not.
Correct.
And the second one to a degree, because he doesn't have his iconic mascot.
Correct. We really don't get Jason until the third one.
Halfway through the third one.
Correct. Correct. But anyway, we start off in 1958 at Camp Crystal Lake as counselors coming back from just sitting around the fire and singing songs. Is apparently that's what you do at camp.
That's all you can do.
Boring as hell. But they sneak off to go have sex, or they are just, you know, killed. Cool. Then we flash forward to present day, being 1980, on Friday, June 13th. And honestly, this is probably the only one that takes place generally in, like, one day on Friday the 13th. I think a lot of them take it over, like, at least a day or two.
Well, I don't think any other film mentions Friday the 13th at all.
No.
Like, the first one, yeah, they make a point that it does happen on Friday the 13th. Okay, got it. But, like, every other film after this, like, it's just the name of the franchise. Like, no one mentions it at all.
Right. Despite being Jason's birthday.
Right. Well, I'm just, yeah, I mean, like, you're titling the films that, you know, like Nightmare on Elm Street, they always go back to Elm Street. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
you know, like Halloween
takes place on Halloween.
Yeah, almost. I think all of them happen on or around Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's like every other franchise, like, you know, Hellraiser, it's like he always comes out of hell, right? So,
yep.
Like, all these other franchises, like, their title means something. Like, this one, the title means something in the first film, but it does not for the rest of them. It's
correct.
Just then the title of the franchise.
Correct. And we're saying all this stuff because, let's face it, these stories are just about the kills, and substance doesn't really matter in this franchise.
Well, yeah, there isn't any. I mean, that's, I don't think we get to, like, the wacky stories until, like, no. The next group of these.
Correct. But essentially, we are meeting, you know, a counselor as she's getting there, because they're going to be opening up this Camp Crystal Lake after, you know, since 1958, after everything happened. So it's been 22 years since the events, and we meet this woman as she's traveling there. She gets a truck driver. We get to meet Ralph, who's like, "You're doomed." Justice for Ralph.
And, yeah, who gets murdered in the second one, exactly. Just like.
Unceremoniously, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, all that's going on there. She gets picked up by someone else along the rest of the way. We don't see who it is. You know, we don't see who the killer is until the very end of the movie, but just about. And she's, you know, chased through and killed. You know, we get to meet the owner, who's kind of like, say, "Hey, this is everything we're doing here." And building this back up, and here's all the counselors that have to fix everything, blah, blah, blah. We have Alice, who is our final girl in this. And the only other person of note, really, in this movie is, of course, Kevin Bacon.
And just because it's Kevin Bacon. Like, I mean, he gets killed off fairly quickly, but
yeah,
the fact that it is Kevin Bacon, yes.
Yeah, so there's about, maybe, I'd say, 7 counselors that help him build up and Steve, the owner. And, well, yeah, we're just kind of get multiple kills through all of it. And as we hear stuff, you know, coming and going, storm comes in, generator turns on, off, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, if we have the classic thing of Alice trying to figure out, it, like, "Oh, I found dead people. Oh, no." And they start popping out of random ass places, and she starts hiding. And then she finally sees a car pull up. And, oh, who we get out? Well, it's why Pamela Voorhees, Jason's mother. And, yeah, she seems nice at first, but then she starts going in Jason's voice, tells, like, "Kill her, mommy, kill her." And she's just getting revenge for the camp reopening after 20 years because counselors let her son drown while she is working at the camp as well. She could have had him not swimming, you know, well, at that point in time. But she didn't want to say what was wrong with Jason. He's just not a very good swimmer. And then we just get like a third act, really, I'd say, piss poor fight between Pamela Voorhees and Alice. Lots of slapping and grunts and just barely touching each other. Eventually to the point where, you know, they're going to have it. And then we get the ending that we always have to have is like the slow motion kill. Alice eventually, after fighting Pam Voorhees, gets a machete and just lops off her head while she just stands there and screams. Not even raise her arms to defend herself. And then what do you do after everyone's been murdered? Well, just go hide out in the boat on the lake. Wake up, and oh no, there is Jason coming out from the bottom of the lake to drag you down. Oh, wait, no, sorry. That was just a dream. Now you're in a hospital, and there's no boy in the lake. But she's like, "But he's still there." That's the movie.
Yeah, you know, that's couple people literally get, it.
Kevin Bacon gets an arrow through the neck, which I will say is pretty good looking. A couple of people are just shot to death. Their archery range. We don't necessarily see everyone getting killed. The owner, he gets stabbed slightly off screen. He just has a gut reaction to it. And yeah, that's about it. Lots of bodies afterwards, but not actually the scene in the process.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, they you know, like the camera like zooms in on somebody and they go like, "Ah," and then it just cuts away.
Yep.
And then they'll find the body later, but we don't see it happen.
Yep. Yeah, that's the first Friday the 13th. You know, could I tell you the first time I saw this movie? No. Would I say it was probably some late night TV version of it? Yes. That was probably the first time I saw Friday the 13th at some point in the 90s. And by the time I really got to this franchise, it was done. And I went back to rewatch it.
Yeah, I mean, I had known about the, because most of these franchises, I knew about them. Mm-hmm. I just didn't really have any desire to watch them. Like, I remember in the horror section, the movie in the upper left corner, because I would always just walk past that aisle usually, but the upper left corner was the iconic hockey mask with the knife through the eye with the blood, mm-hmm. which is the fourth one, I think. Yeah, that was I saw that box, that VHS box, like a bazillion times, but I never rented any of them.
That's even the cover in the video game Friday the 13th is that image.
Right. Yeah. So I saw that image a million times. I knew all about Jason, but I didn't really care. Mm-hmm. But I was like that for almost all of the franchises, too. I mean, like Nightmare on Elm Street, I had seen a couple of them, but I didn't watch all of them. I'd seen a couple of them because they were on, you know, HBO or something, you know, but it wasn't like I didn't watch all the franchises. I didn't go back and watch all the franchises for years. It was years later. It was maybe like mid-90s.
That's why I was probably like 96, 97.
Yeah, it was like mid-90s when I was like, OK, I'm going to go back and watch like every one of these franchises, because I had a bunch of friends who were like super into horror movies and they're constantly trying to talk to me about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I've never seen it. I don't know. I've never seen it. Stop asking. So like, I finally just went and watched all of them. I did like Friday the 13th. I did Nightmare on Elm Street. I did Hellraiser. I did Texas Chainsaw. I did. And I think I started Leprechaun. And I think that's when I stopped. Because I was like,
I mean, Leprechaun was only like two in at that point in time. I said the major ones were essentially dead by like mid-90s.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, they all got really old, and I was like, ugh, and I would just move on to the next one. So I honestly don't know which ones I've seen and which ones I haven't. These three I've definitely seen before. I'm pretty sure I've seen some of the other ones, because I remember the one that Crispin Glover is in.
That's the next one. That's the fourth one.
But I don't know. Honestly, I don't know how far I got into it before I stopped. We'll find out, you know, because it's one of those things I don't really care. I don't rewatch them. You know, this is like from the mid-90s is the last time I actually watched these. So,
yeah, I mean, like I said, I personally rewatch these probably once a year or once every other year.
Yeah, I know. I know you rewatch them all the time. Oh, yeah. I don't bother.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he is on my horror sleeve, so I have to pay homage to the guy on my sleeve, right? If I didn't like him, he wouldn't be on my sleeve as a tattoo.
I mean, maybe you just like the design or something.
I mean, I do like the design. yeah, do you want me to start with my highlights?
Hey, why don't you do that?
All right. Well, first and foremost, the score, with one exception, is phenomenal. It is very string heavy, and it's very... You know, as I was watching this, as I was taking notes, I'm like, this, the string part is very like Alfred Hitchcock esque, Psycho esque, and I don't think I've ever really paid much attention to it before.
Well, I mean, this is still like a budding era, like a budding genre at this time, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah, the soundtracks were still finding themselves. I mean, you know, like, we got the later in the 80s and stuff, it became kind of formulaic, right? The jump scare music and stuff like that. But at this point in time, it's still a pretty new thing. Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah, people are figuring out where it goes. But, yeah, I literally have score on mine, too.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is, the, you know, we get the... Go ahead.
The banjo rock.
Oh.
But, yeah.
But, you know, we get the whole, like, you know, you know, all
right
that stuff.
Right off the bat.
Right. So, it's like, you know, that's iconic stuff. I mean, I think that continues, well, at least it does for a while.
Oh, yeah, it does. And there's, I know with that, talk about score and stuff like that, that is, a lot of people are saying that it's kill, 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 ma, ma, ma. And I don't know if anyone's actually ever come out and said that they created this movie and the score.
I'm pretty sure that's bullshit. It's just,
I agree.
It's just, ch, 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 ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
That's all it is. It's, yeah. It sounds like anybody's saying anything.
And this is one of Tom Savini's earliest works. That wasn't Romero.
Well, yeah, I was gonna say, like, he did a lot of work at Romero. He had starred in Dawn of the Dead,
but he was very fresh in Dawn of the Dead.
Correct.
And this is only like his third or fourth one.
Well, I think this is the movie where he really cut his teeth on his own.
It is. But, and it shows, like, his blood is the Savini blood formula almost at this point in time. And, you know, I said, I also put that, like, with Tom Savini, the kills that we do see, look great. I think even the bodies that we see look great for the prosthetic work and the makeup work he did on them. And I really appreciate it. And I honestly think the Kevin Bacon death scene of the arrowhead through the neck, through the bottom, looks great still.
Yeah, it's still one of those scenes you're looking at like, how the fuck did they do that? Like,
yeah, I watched something on how they did that.
Yeah, and, like, is he like underneath it and just sticking his head up and then yeah. It's like a fake body? Like, I was assuming that's how they did it. But again, it's that good of a thing where you're looking at it like, how is that happening? Because that's really his head.
Yep. Yeah. But I said that's also why it's Kevin Bacon's memorable for the series, because he has, I think, the best on-screen death in this movie.
Oh, yeah. One of the few that you actually see, right?
Correct. Like I said, everyone's just reaction. And I just have to laugh every time I see the slap fight at the end of this movie. it's so out of place. And the movie slows down so much.
Well, because it's like, yeah, you take like two people who are clearly like don't understand how fights work.
Yeah.
And then the director's just like, okay, attack each other. And they don't know what that means. Mm-hmm. So they're just rolling around. Yeah, that's essentially what happens.
That's a slap fight. But those are my highlights. How about yours?
Yeah, a lot of the same stuff. Again, Tom Savini, like I said, he's just cutting his teeth on this movie. Like, this is, I think, where he really made his name for himself on his own.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was a known quantity by then, but he was primarily working with Romero. Like, they were partnered together, and Romero right. obviously had a bigger name at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this is the one where he really made his own name, put his own mark on it, which is cool. The Bacon, of course, the score we already talked about. Now, I mean, again, this is an iconic film, right? And it is kind of raw for the time period. I mean, yeah, they don't show a lot of the kills and stuff, but again, this is 1980. This is mm-hmm. the very beginnings of this genre. So I think, you know, they're not really taking careful steps. There is a lot of murder and blood, but they're not they're just trying not to get to that like rated X level that I think people were still like worried about at that time, because, you know, the MPAA was still like threatening to put X on super violent stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they were just kind of cautiously doing that. And I think it may have actually been rated X, and then they had to change stuff to get it to an R.
That also happens, like I said, later on, like 1986 one.
Right. It happened a lot around this time period. So again, that might be why they did that. I don't think mm-hmm. they did it on purpose. I think they did that to kind of like soften the blow, to like to get a rated R, and so they don't have to worry about that X rating.
Right.
Because obviously X rating, you know, limits what you can do and your audience and all that. So that, and again, you know, like the twist is, I mean, now everybody fucking knows the twist, right?
Yeah.
But like at that time, I was like, you know, people would start talking about it. I'm like, no, shut up, I haven't seen it. I literally did not know it wasn't Jason until the end of it. I was like, oh wow, there's a like genuine surprise.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was good. I mean, I guess I can go to my low point. That's all for my high points. I guess I go to my low points now is I really think they kind of ruin their own canon right in the beginning, right? Because
mm-hmm.
like Jason at the very end of this film, he like, you know, whatever, he's like a ghost zombie that comes out of the lake. But the next film, he's like very much alive and had been alive the whole time.
The whole time, yes. They make comment that like, oh, he's a fully grown man now. We think he's alive and saw his mom die.
Right. But like the mom was talking to herself.
Yeah.
In his voice.
Yep.
So like if he was alive and existed, why is she upset that people let her son die?
That means this challenge individual stays in the forest for 22 years on right. his own. Don't let his mom think he's dead.
Right. Yeah. It's very confusing, and it's like it breaks its own canon. Like in the first fucking film. I mean, the first film is good on its own.
Mm-hmm.
But the like going into the very end of the ghost coming out of the lake, which is bizarre. But then in the second one, they try to say, "Oh, that was the Jason," but it's like, okay, that was clearly a child.
Mm-hmm.
like, or a young adolescent boy. And now in the second film, he's like, you know, whatever, 30 or 40 years old or whatever the hell he is.
Right.
It just, yeah, it just breaks its own canon in its own, in the first film of the franchise. So it's like, it's already going, like, it's not going to hold canon up, you know, the rest of this. It doesn't kind of get there. Okay. So low points, we'll see. The camp sing along was fucking terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Did not like that. Like, she got that ride from that trucker. That trucker was like basically sexually assaulting her.
I mean, like, he did have her hands, his hands on her ass to help her get in.
Right. I'm just like, how the fuck is that okay? But I guess this is 1980. I guess. Or it was like, I guess, more accepted back then. But yeah, that dude was like very handsy. I'm like, mm-hmm. What the fuck? And she's just giggling like nothing's happening. I guess, again, she probably did it for safety's sake back then. But I'm just like, what the fuck? Why was that in the movie? Because he doesn't come back. Like, you know, he drops her off and she gets picked up by somebody else and that's it. And but whatever.
Yeah.
The acting is straight up terrible in this film. I know that's not the focus. I know that nobody gives a shit about the acting, but the acting is fucking terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And who the fuck plays Strip Monopoly? And how the fuck would that work? You know what I mean? Like, oh, you got to pay rent with your clothes. Like, okay. So like, if you have Boardwalk with hotels, and then somebody else is just owns the thing, do they both give up the same amount of clothing for rent? Like, there's got to be like a money, like to clothes ratio somewhere. I don't know. I was very confused. I'm like, how would this work?
I don't think it does.
No,
I think that's what game they have.
I was like, it has to be a simple game. Like, strips, anything has to be a simple game. Win, lose. When you lose, you take off something. Like, Monopoly is not like that. Unless you finish the game, which everybody knows in Monopoly takes hours to fucking finish. So I didn't get that. And then again, like I said, most of these kills happen off screen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we get like the camera zooming in and they go, ah, and then cut. Yep. And then, you know, the next scene is somebody wandering around. I wonder where they are. Oh no, there's the dead body hanging out a door. You know, that's basically it. But again, I understand, you know, where the MPAA was at that time period. I know it's very, you know, they had to step very gently and put, you know, forceful stuff in there because they didn't want to get that X rating, which would, you know, kill them. So I kind of understand why. It's just kind of goofy looking back on it.
Yeah.
That's all I guess.
Yeah. And I got to say, of course, you know, this originally started off as a parody of Halloween. How this is a parody of Halloween, I don't know. I would love this in that version. But like I said, I also said handsy truck driver, Christian songs, then sex.
Yeah, that's how the real world works, dude.
I know. I said that banjo rock, like that, there's no way those guys would be listening to that song they're listening to in the truck.
I was when I was in high school, the horniest women I knew were from Catholic
girls. Oh yeah.
Like from Catholic school, like without a doubt.
Yeah. So much darkness. It is so dark in this movie. You know, it's amazing how little you actually see in some of the, like, the third act scenes. And I refuse to believe that Pamela Voorhees has the upper body strength to be hoisting these people up, feet off the ground with arrows, to just put the owner in a tree. And what was the purpose of her hiding the bodies this way? She didn't kill anyone. Like, I understand it's for us to have these jump scares for the people we didn't see dead, but she wouldn't be able to do that. There's no way.
She was using leverage.
I guess. And like, as like she's trying to open the door and then it stops. And then we see the car drive. Like, how far does she run back just to get the car to just try to make that entrance? Like, there's a lot of things that don't make any logical sense when you think about it being Mrs. Voorhees.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, the logic of the film doesn't make any sense. Like I said, the logic of, you know, her talking to herself in Jason's voice, and yet mm-hmm. somehow Jason was alive the whole time.
Yeah, sure.
Like, even if you're like a you know, a misshapen guy who's lived in the woods his whole life, if you see your mom fucking talking to herself, you know something's fucking wrong.
Yep. Oh, yeah. All right, that's all I have. So our olives this week is for barnyard weapons, because we'll get into reasons for that, because there's a lot.
Well, yeah, other than the first one, there's a lot of weapons in barns.
Hell yeah, that's where you keep all your good weapons. So, Salem, how many barnyard weapons out of 10 do you give Friday the 13th from 1980?
Again, you know, this is the first film. It's an iconic film. I do like it. I mean, the acting is terrible, and I guess I know that's not the point, but I'm just saying, like, there are things, there's glaring issues with the film, but I think the heart of the film really comes through, and it kind of overshadows a lot of it. So I'm going to give it an 8.25.
Yeah. As you said, you know, this is only the second horror franchise really in existence.
Right.
You know, because this is before Halloween 2, and it kind of beat Halloween 2 to the number of stuff and kind of kicked off the slasher franchises of the 80s. I don't think Halloween kicked it off as much as people think it did. It took a while for it to happen. But this is a strong movie, and, you know, they just get a little bit more ridiculous each and every one after this.
Yeah.
But this is, like I said, a great standalone thing, and I'm going to give this 8.5 Barnyard Weapons out of 10. I think this is a classic. I think this is, in my opinion, one of the best Friday the 13th.
Well, it is. It is good. It is. And it is, like I said, the only one that focuses on it actually being Friday the 13th. There's a reason for the title. The rest of these films don't even touch on it. That's just the name of the movie. It has nothing to do with the story.
Right. It's not like he wakes up on every Friday the 13th.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, take us through part two with the just explosive title.
Friday the 13th part two. Like the fucking title is the same. It's like the same Friday the 13th that goes forward. The only thing, it doesn't break the glass when it gets there.
Yeah,
that's it. But it's the same title. It's, there's so many reused things in this film. It's like they like cut it together with like the B footage from the first movie, I feel. Anyway, so the very beginning is the same girl from the end of the first one wakes up at home like months later. Apparently her insanity just wore off.
Yes.
And she's like, oh, I was having a bad dream, because of course she's flashes back to the fucking
third act.
Yeah, like up. Literally it's like I lost count, but I think it's like it's almost 10 minutes long. But yeah, so we go back, we watch the entire fucking ending again, the whole run into the boat part and all that shit, everything, the whole bullshit we watch again.
In case you missed the first movie.
Yeah, and then she wakes up going like, ooh, what a bad dream. And then she goes like, oh, I hear something. She's walking around her house, and she opens up the fridge, and Jason's mom's head is in the fridge. And then she gets murdered. Now, she's obviously not at Camp Crystal Lake.
We'll get to that point.
How the fuck did Jason track her down? And how did he, like, his giant misshapen face like somehow hunt her down? And well, whatever, I guess it doesn't.
Oh, we'll get to that in a little bit. So
it doesn't matter. So anyway, so now we got, this is like 5 years after the first one. We fast forward
now, 1985 in this world. Apparently. I'm keeping track of the time.
So it's like 5 years later, and it's somebody, and it's not the same camp. It's like another camp next to that other camp. I don't think they say the name of the camp.
I think
they purposely leave it vague to so you can still call it Camp Crystal Lake, but it is very clearly not the same camp.
Yeah, it's the same Crystal Lake.
Well, it's the same lake, yes. Yeah. But the camp is different, because they talk about how they're not supposed to go into the other camp. Mm-hmm. And this is his own camp that was next to the other camp that he paid money to renovate or whatever.
Yeah.
And he put money into it to renovate it, whatever. So we get our new cast of characters who are very scantily clad, I would say. Like, most of the women are barely wearing clothes. Like,
for being for being a poison ivy infected camp, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to say, like the women are wearing, like, bare midriffs. Like, you know, the shirt is barely covering their chest. I mean, like, you know, pants with their ass hanging out. I mean, it's like, every woman is dressed like the same way. It's very bizarre. So anyway, so they're all like, you know, cleaning up, except for, oh no, that was the girl, that the cook dying. That was in the first one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So this one is just like everybody's like fixing up the house. There's a guy in a wheelchair for some reason. But yeah, I got no problem with guys in a wheelchair working. I'm just saying, like, I'm pretty sure these cabins wouldn't be like wheelchair accessible in the middle of the fucking woods.
In 1985, no.
Right. So I kind of felt bad for him tooling around, but he seemed to be doing all right. Whatever. So they're all like, you know, fixing up the camp and like building it up. You know, their kids are supposed to be there in like, I think what they said, like 2 weeks or something.
Yeah.
And so they're all like just preparing the camps to go. And then they kind of get everything all set up. And then they're like, okay, well, we have one last night where we can go out and party, you know, and get drunk. And then after that, we're going to be, you know, dedicated to finishing this up. So we're going to have our last, you know, night of party fun. And so they, every, like the owner guy and all the, most of the people leave and a couple, couples stay behind.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, like, you know, the one goes to get it on right away. They're both murdered. And then the wheelchair guy and his lady friend, they're like playing, I don't know, what are those, video games?
It's electronic hockey, electronic football.
I was like, they wouldn't show the screen. I'm like, show the screen. What the fuck is it? But it was like a giant, like beige colored, like it looked like one of those, you know, like the race car ones where you just like move the car in like three different spaces.
Yeah.
Oh, it looked like one of those, only it was like the giant version because it's 1981.
Early Tiger handheld electronics.
Yeah, yeah. But I was like, show the screen. I want to see what it looks like. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so yeah, they're like playing a game and then eventually they like, you know, she like comes out and asks him, is everything paralyzed? Very funny lady. Yeah, so he's like, not everything. I can make do. And so they're going to get on and then they, well, he gets killed. She like runs around outside for a while. She gets killed too. And then like slowly but surely the other people start trickling in from the party. And like, as they get there, they all want to get it on. And so they all get killed. And basically they all just get murdered until we're down to, the last girl who is like, kind of like the owner's like assistant.
Yeah.
Kind of, I mean, we got this vibe in the first one too, where it was like the owner guy's like in his 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And these women are like very clearly like very early 20s. It's kind of a creepy relationship. But anyway, because it was like she was his assistant, but she was also like his girlfriend, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was bizarre. Anyway, so he gets killed and she is like, you know, the final girl. And as she's running away from him through the woods, she finds this old, like, beaten up house out there. And it's like, you know, looks like a shack that somebody built out of like spare parts. And so she goes in there, and it's like, oh, you know, beat up old place. She goes in the back room and she finds a shrine to Pamela Voorhees.
You're right.
With her head on it and her sweater there. So he, you know, Jason, we know it's Jason now because he's got a bag over his head with one eyeball.
Yeah.
Which he has two eyeballs, but the other one doesn't work because it's in a mask. So they don't think he needs to see out of that eye, I guess. I mean, like he would still be able to see out of that eye. Obviously the actor can't because of the mask, but like he would still be able to see out of that eye. It would be all like, you know, on the other side of his head or whatever. But anyway, so. He breaks into the room and she has the genius idea to put on the mom's sweater and then pretend that she's the mom.
Yeah.
And she goes, oh, Jason, like, you know, put down your machete. Don't murder me. I'm your mama. And so she like, you know, gets on her knees and she goes to kill him with the machete. And he like at the last minute realizes it's not his mom. That leader of the camp who was like everyone, we all assumed he was dead because he was gone. For like, I don't know, the last third of the film. He just all of a sudden shows up and goes, oh my God. So he starts wrestling around with Jason and he's about to get murdered by Jason. And she comes up and like chops him with the machete.
Like, so like the side of the neck.
Yeah. Like, yeah, goes, like comes in through the space between the neck and the shoulder and then like cuts all the way down, like a good, like 6 inches in. Yeah,
through his collarbone.
Right. Yeah. And then he's like, you know, supposedly dead. And then they're all crying and they like, that's the end.
Well, Is it the end though?
And it's funny because the third one does the same thing that this one did, which is funny.
Absolutely.
But we'll get there in a second.
Yes.
But I don't think that I miss anything.
Oh, she also has that little dream sequence as well. But yeah, who knows if it's real or not? I don't know, because like when she's being taken away, I'm saying this is my low point right now. When she is taken away, Paul, the owner, is nowhere to be seen. So did he actually come back? Did he not? I don't know.
Well, yeah, they never mentioned him again. Yeah.
Correct.
Because, yeah, the third one, it was supposed to center around her, and she turned it down.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had to, like, come up with this other storyline at the last minute. So who knows? Who knows if she, you know, if she was supposed to come back, if Paul was actually going to be there or not? We don't know.
No idea. But, this is our true form of Jason, but sans hockey mask.
Yeah. Well, they took the bag off his head, and he was like, actually, in that one, yeah, they do show what he looks like at the very end, right?
If you said he was from The Hills Have Eyes, I would have said, I believe you.
He looks like, a cross between a mutant from The Hills Have Eyes and Chunk.
Yeah, from The Goonies. He has half his hair still.
Right.
Because, you know, I do put in my spoiler alert for the downside of the third one, like, he lost all his hair, poor guy.
Well, he survived a machete wound to his, shoulder, neck, and chest. It scares the hair right off your head.
I guess. Yeah, but like I said, this is the true form. People really start thinking about it, but why don't you do your highlights first?
Okay, so yeah, this is the first appearance of the actual villain of the franchise, which is funny because he doesn't show up until the second part. Well, I mean, I guess technically he was in the first one, but he was a child.
Well, I mean, that's what the whole lawsuit's about, so...
Yeah, so like, so that's the whole thing. So, like, technically, I guess he was in the first one, but yeah, he's the real villain. He doesn't show up until the second one, and this is his first appearance. Those old video games, man, I thought that was cool. I was like, I was trying to look at the screen. I'm like, what are these things? I need to know.
They're Mattel Electronics, just saying.
It's like, they look like, I'm sure they were terrible, but I really wanted to see what 1981 handheld games look like.
Mm-hmm.
We get more kills shown in this film. There's still quite a few off-screen deaths for sure. But we do get to see more kills live in this one.
Yeah.
Which is nice. I literally wrote Jason's hill folk face. So you already said The Hills Have Eyes. So yes, that's very much true. That's all I got.
That's all you have. I put 5 years later. So I'm just, like I said, I'm keeping track of the timeline here. Because Nightmare on Elm Street does this horribly too. It's 1985. That scanty clad woman. So this dickhole of a guy shoots her ass with a slingshot, scares her, steals her clothes, and still is going to hook up with
her. Yeah, I mean, I guess it was slim pickings for her. Everybody else was taken, I guess.
I didn't know slingshot to the ass was a turn on.
In the early 80s, apparently it was.
To talk about some people going to the bar, and the people, there are a handful of people that do happen to stay, but they're all the side characters that, like, you know, he mentions a couple people by name, and then he goes, I haven't met the rest of you. I'll get to know you later. And he doesn't, because they disappear from the movie.
Right. He's basically saying, we don't need to know who you are, because you're going to be dead soon anyway.
Or just not show up for the rest of the film. Correct. But no one generally talks about that ginger kid surviving the entire events of Friday the 13th Part 2. He's still alive. Like, he was drunk off his ass and survived the slaughter. And
he might have been killed off screen. We don't
know. I don't know, but it's never mentioned again. Like, if you ever want to bring back a character that was like, oh man, I almost died that night, but I was too drunk, that's a good way to bring him back. That's all I have. And the kills as well. I'll go in my low points. I go, how the hell did Jason find her? I have no idea. This is 1981. How are you going to find someone? You're not. Unless, like, he has a superpower of finding people and venturing outside of Crystal Lake that he never has, generally, the rest of the series.
Right.
You know, I always find it fascinating when cats come into a house and window that they have to jump at you first to scare you because they're jumping through the window into you. I said that you can tell, like, you have to know that that tow truck has to be a setup, right? Because they, as soon as they leave the tow truck into the payphone, the guy immediately starts towing their truck. poor Ralph. You know, he didn't, you know, take his own things into account. He went to another camp just to tell them their doom, but he died for his harbinger of doom. Poor other dog. I don't know who the other dog is. You think it's Muffin. It's not.
Right, it's not. But it very clearly looks like Muffin.
Yeah. Almost to the point where I think it was supposed to be Muffin, and then someone made them change the ending and have the dog still alive.
Right, yeah.
And that's why I said, like, is Paul alive or dead? I don't think we'll ever get the answer. I know that Jenny is said to be in an insane asylum forever after these events. But Paul, no idea. And it's interesting, like, this is bear country and poison ivy and ticks. There's also corn in that town. Corn and bears don't generally go together in climate areas.
No, and you don't think bears like corn?
I don't think everyone's ever gone through a cornfield worried about bears. No, I don't think that's the thing.
We'll have to find out.
And that corn was tall as hell for being summer. The corn was.
Well, we don't know when in summer it was. Well, for them talking about, you know, setting up summer camp. Uh-huh. Yeah, you're probably right because they had to have been setting it up in the beginning of summer.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm like, someone's clearly shot this film in the fall, and didn't realize that corn is in their picture. That's what I have. How about you?
Yeah, you know, I hate when films is like, there's ways to show what happened in the previous film without just straight up showing a fucking flashback.
Mm-hmm.
I hate when movies do that. They just like show you like, oh, here's what happened in the last film. Let's just take the cut, 10 minutes of free time from the first film and just put it in this one.
At least it wasn't half the movie like Basket Case.
Oh, dear God. It's like, why? Why do you have to, like, and if you are going to show scenes from it, like, do quick cuts, man.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't need to see her running through the forest for minutes at a time. Like, we don't need to see all that. Like, just give us the highlights, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I hate when there's flashbacks. Again, you know, they brought the actress back and then, like, killed her, like, within the first 2 minutes. And then, like, fast forward 5 years, like, she has nothing to do with the plot. They never explain how he found her or where she even was.
And yet, she's coming back for the prequel TV show. Weird.
Of course. Okay. And I would say, like, everybody in this film is wearing shorts that are way too short.
Yes. Everybody.
Every single character is wearing two short shorts. It's like, wow. And then every single person, whenever they enter a room, immediately starts changing.
Yep.
Like, there has to be, like, at least 10 changing scenes in this film. Like, it's constant.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like we said, poor Muffin, but then Muffin's resurrected anyway, because it was very clearly, like, a dead Muffin. Like,
oh, yeah, it was. It's like Muffin's like a white Shih Tzu.
Right. They showed it like a scene of walking up to Jason's leg, and then the next scene is them finding a dead dog.
Yep.
Yeah. So whatever. Muffin, I guess, is fine. And then again, like, you know, the mom was schizophrenic, talking to herself, doing Jason's bidding, even though Jason was only a part of her own mind. But Jason was also alive at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, what the fuck? Like, what are you doing? Like, if Jason is alive and he's back in your little hut shack that you were living in the woods, why are you talking to yourself in his voice? Like I said, I feel like they break their own canon in the first film.
Yeah.
And especially in this one.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's what I got.
All right. You want me to go first for the olives?
Sure.
I said, this is definitely, it's a step down. Like I said, I have to leave wiggle room here for the numbers to get really low as we progress to this franchise. But I will still give this 8 Barnyard Weapons out of 10. And like I said, it's the first foray into Jason Voorhees as we get to know him a little bit more. And it's honestly just like an interesting thing to just have a completely different killer for the second movie. And then that stays the rest of the franchise.
Right.
You know, I mean, like, I understand, like, Scream franchises, the villains die, it's always new people at the end of it, and that's fine, because they're, you know, people. We don't know what Jason is at this point in time, other than a grown-ass man that somehow survived and hid from his mom for nearly 25 years. But it's interesting that they took this bold choice and then just ran with it. That's why I give this a 8. How about you?
Yeah, I'm not gonna go that high. I think it took a big step down. I don't want to say big step down, but it took a definite step down from the first one. I'll go six Barnyard Weapons out of 10, where you know, it's definitely, it's not bad, but it's definitely going that way.
Oh yeah. All right, so we were at 3D in, you know, 1982, and you know, still timeline wise just like a couple days later. Yeah, so we're still in 1985 here. And this movie is very 3D, as the titles let you know, as it's 3D in your eyes right away. And you know, we're introduced to this other place that they have this house on the lake and a barn, and this woman, you know, it's finally coming back to here where this event happened. Spoiler alert, maybe or maybe she didn't see Jason Voorhees a couple years ago. We don't know at this point in time. I don't know if it's ever fully explained, because she has weird visions, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, we have probably, I'm going to say, the second most annoying character in this franchise, Shelley.
Wow. I don't know. I might put him up to number one.
You might not remember number five. So.
Well, again, so far. We're only doing so far.
I'm just saying as a whole, because I remember. And they're just a group of friends, and Shelley's just kind of the quote fat guy that's awkward because he's just honestly an asshole to people.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, yeah, it's okay to be fat and awkward, but like, he's just a straight up asshole.
Like, he's an actor, but he really, what he means to say is he's trying to be a special effects person. He's just trying to scare everyone with his special effects. We have two stoner friends that their job is to get stoned. That's their plot of the movie. We have the old flame of this. Of the woman that's there, right? Why can't I think of her name right now? Can't remember her name. Is it Lisa? I don't know. I'll look it up while I'm talking. And so, yeah, she's trying to figure out what all that's going on here. And, you know, they have to get supplies. They run to the biker gang, which is this there just to get killed in the barn. Right? Oh, it's Chris. Sorry, Chris. Dana Kimball. And, yeah, and we finally start seeing all this stuff, and people start to slowly get murdered. Shelly is wearing a hockey mask and scuba suit, as you do, I guess. And after he gets killed, we finally have Jason Voorhees' mask. Finally. It only took 45 minutes in this movie for him to get his iconic hockey mask.
Yeah, I was going to say, he was just barefacing it. Like, yeah. The first half of the film, like when he killed the old man and the wife, he was just barefacing it. And then, yeah, the first couple of kills, he was just barefacing it.
Yeah, so we're introduced to this couple that owns, I'm putting, the grossest grocery store, is he just literally puts his fingers in everything he's trying to sell and lets animals crawl over his produce. So all this is happening. Like I said, we find out that, you know, Chris's backstory is that she thought she saw Jason, but her parents never mentioned it. She's like, I was being attacked, and then I blacked out, and I was back in my bed. Everything was okay. I'm like, well, that doesn't sound like Jason Voorhees in the slightest. And then we just a whole bunch of 3D shenanigans. You know, people have to get...
Well, this is technically before Jason was, like, a supernatural entity.
Correct.
So maybe he, you know, assaulted her, and she blocked it out or something.
Who knows? But anyway, we have 3D stuff. You have people getting killed with pitchforks, so we can see the poles. We have people juggling, so we can see it. We see you have yo-yos. We have stuff being thrown at the camera, blah, 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 blah.
Even the opening credits are in 3D.
Yeah, it's quite awful. Anyway, everyone kind of gets killed. You know, the hippie people get killed. You know, guys on the shitter being spooked. And everyone's just trying to kill each other. You know, like I said, and like everyone wants to go to this great barn that exists where all the weapons exist. This is the movie that has all the weapons. Literally anything you can think of, it's in that barn. They show it in great detail as people are walking through it, character by character. Fantastic. You know, yeah. Biker gang goes there because Shelly, you know, they take his wallet. He gives him $20. He's like, oh, man, I don't like this. And the guy tries to stop him, punches the windows, and he runs over his bike. And yeah, that's a good reason. That's how you get a biker gang after you.
He hit the bike first.
That's true. And then he punches
the window. He accidentally hit the bike. He didn't do it on purpose, but he put the car in reverse, hit the bike, and then the guy got pissed and threw a chain through the window.
Yeah. Yeah. And then runs it over, and that's why the biker gang's there, just for more bodies. Yeah, I said just people die, and eventually we end up with Chris versus Jason, leads him to the world's dangerous barn and hangs him. But guess what? He's still kind of alive and just pulls himself out of being hung, seemingly dead. And she kind of just, you know, tries to hit him with a shovel and eventually just implants an axe just right into his head, getting the first chip of the hockey mask that is iconic now, the left side of the mask, right? Anyway, all this is happening, and she's like, you know what? I'm going to go on to the boat and do this now. I'm going to say Chris like looks very much like a swamp at this point.
Yeah, this side of Crystal Lake is the shitty part.
It really is. And, you know, while that's happening, all of a sudden, you know, she sees someone in the mask, you know, with, oh, you know, in the window, she's going to come after her. And then, like, the mom jumps out of the lake just like Jason did. Oh wait, no, that was all just also a dream, and he's still just dead in the barn. Or dead, you know, in the barn, seemingly there. And we show the lake and everything's okay, and the franchise. Oh wait, no.
No, the next one's the final chapter.
Correct. That's last. Yeah, that's just about it. Three shenanigans and kills. And just really annoying caricatures of people. Man, I don't know if I've ever... I may have watched this in 3 at one point in time on my 3D TV when I had it just to see what it looked like, and it does not look any better. Just saying that right now. It does not look any better.
No, I've never seen it in 3D.
But it's... And I think this is the problem with 3D movies, especially like this, when they didn't really have the 3D technology that we have today. It's very obviously made for 3D, so when you're not watching the 3D, it looks stupid.
Yeah, it's like, why is this so close to the screen?
Yeah. But yeah, that was just kind of the excuses for everything. But, I mean, you agree, this just did not hold up as a 3D movie. I think they need to re-release it without the extra pieces in there, because you could really easily take those scenes out for the most part and not change the movie. I don't need a different point of view of them juggling from the top versus watching them juggle.
Yeah, but the people will bitch.
I know.
You can't change a film that's been out for this many years.
Yeah. Like I said, but we finally have the hockey mask, so yay. I'll start with my highlights. Man, when Coca-Cola got a product placement, they weren't expecting the bathroom of this place, were they? Because they had multiple Coca-Cola products in that bathroom. I thought that's pretty funny. Like I said, he gets his mask. That's good. I think the kills are decent when you do get to see them. You know, the guy getting handstand, essentially, like, feels like almost split down the half from the machete through his groin out. You know, it was great seeing Shelly die when he died, because he's annoying as hell. But part of me, and this is kind of why it's interesting, is like, as soon as the title music starts playing, like, you start getting, like, disco version of the theme song, which is interesting. It almost feels like it's a parody of the first movie. And I don't know if that's intentional or what, but it feels like a parody of the first movie. I don't know about you.
I like the music.
Oh yeah.
the opening music. It's ridiculous, but I liked it.
Yeah, it's still Harry Manfredi that's still in the music, but yeah, it's just a classic disco take on it, but it's good. I said I think they kept the gore pretty consistent. At least we're not in the 3D world of pink blood that we had in the 2010s. So I'm glad that's still nice red blood. That's what I have. How about you?
Yeah, so again, the opening crawl music, it also plays during the credits. I thought it's an interesting song choice in this movie, but I was like, okay, I can get down with this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, he comes back with the hockey mask. That's good, I guess. It's an iconic thing. And then also she was reading an issue of Fangoria when she was sitting on the couch, which I thought was interesting. And then she got blood all over it. And I was like, man, that thing's probably worth money if it was not got blood all over it. Yeah, that's it for high points. The low points, again, another fucking flashback.
Yep, same style.
We get the last 10 minutes of the first movie. And the thing I thought was ridiculous, like, you know, if you're showing a flashback, you don't need to show slow motion in the flashback. Like, we already know what happened. We don't need to watch it in slow motion again. And it's like, literally, they just cut the last 10 minutes of the film. They didn't bother changing anything. It's just there. Like I said, the slow-mo when she chops him with the machete and all that is still there. Like, they didn't bother taking it out. It's just fucking lazy. And all these horror sequels do the same shit, and it drives me nuts. Again, the 3D stuff sucked. I mean, I don't know if it was good when it was in the theater, but I doubt it.
I doubt it as well.
Yeah, I mean, the goofy hooligan subplot, again, I like you said, I think it was just there for a higher body count, but, like, it's pointless. Like, they follow him back to their house, and then instead of going in the house, they go in the barn for some bizarre reason, and then they're all murdered one by one in the barn. Like, the barn is not that big. Like, you would have seen your friend getting murdered, you know, I don't know, whatever. Yes. They're just goofy. But yeah, and then Shelley was just a terrible, terrible fucking person. I mean, again, he's like self-deprecating on one hand, and then on the other hand, he's like entitled.
Yeah.
You know, because he's like, oh yeah, I know I'm fat and I'm a loser and nobody likes me, but, like, you want to kiss me? She's like, no. He's like, bitch.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, what the fuck? Are you? Like, she's being nice enough saying, like, I do like you. Not romantically, but I like you as a person. Just stop being a dick. And his answer is like, bitch, this is why you're an asshole that has no friends, Shelley. Not because you're fat and awkward. It's because you're an asshole.
That's very true. Yeah.
And again, this happens not once, but twice in this film. When somebody has taken a shit and they get up without wiping and just put their pants back on.
Yep.
This is fucking disgusting. It doesn't happen once. It happens fucking twice.
And the guy that owns the grocery store really needed the light.
Yeah, because, like, yeah, it was like they're the squirt sound and everything. It was disgusting. And yeah, he just, like, gets up, puts his pants on.
Mm-hmm.
The other guy, the stoner guy in the outhouse, yeah, he just sitting there taking his shit. And he's, oh, what was that? Just pulls his pants up like, hello, people. I don't know if maybe the guy making the film was an alien and doesn't understand what taking a shit is. I don't know. Maybe he's one of those guys that think he's gay if he washes his ass or whatever. I don't know what those fucking people are up to.
Yeah.
But it was just bothered me. Again, it wasn't just once. It was twice. It's disgusting. Yeah. That's all I got.
Yeah. You know, I said gross grocery store. I said 3D. It's just really bad. Shelley, I'm not sure that punching glass is better with a chain on your hand or not. I doubt it.
No, he didn't punch the glass. He threw the chain at the glass.
It looked like he punched it, but maybe not.
Did you ever see Mad Max?
Yeah.
I have. Yeah. You throw the chain at the window.
Yeah. Hammock beds. Hammocks are not fun to sleep in for bed.
I don't think I could. I've been in a hammock. I've never tried to sleep in one. I'm pretty sure I wouldn't be able to.
I have slept in one, and it's not fun. You're like enveloped by the hammock, and that just seems awful. Like, it seems like this place had money, but here's my old room, and it's a hammock. Cool. Like I said, poor Jason lost all his hair this time. He stopped looking like half mountain man, half sloth.
He looked like he was wearing a mask. He looked like he was wearing a Halloween mask.
Oh, easily. easily, for sure. And he's just like showing his mask off. And that's great. And I said, I did not like the mom ending. I thought that was just weird and stupid. And I said, I didn't like it. I'm sick of the dream sequences at the end.
Well, yeah, we keep getting these, you know, ambiguous endings. Like, what happened? What really happened? We don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's what I have. So, Salem, how many Barnyard Weapons out of 10 do you give Friday the 13th Part 3D?
We're taking steps down here. And not in a, I mean, not in a good way. This movie is just not good.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go 3.5.
Oh man, not even 3 for 3D.
No.
No, yeah, so Shelley and the 3D just really, really bring the score down for me. Like I said, I know this franchise doesn't. It's not good, but yeah, to me, this is why I liked the main character in this. Why, you know, I like Chris. Everyone else is just atrocious. So, it probably, in my opinion, this is probably the weakest one of them all. If I can recall correctly, I will go down to 5 Garnier weapons out of 10. It just kills it. I love to just recut it without 3D and see if it's any better and just change Shelley.
I don't think the 3D is what made it bad.
Well, I mean, and that's what the thing, like, I think the 3D is what made it bad is because they're focused on 3D versus story. I think if it wasn't 3D, like, I understand what you're saying. I think if they attempt to just make a third one, not have it be 3D, you probably could have made a better movie. But you can,
if you want a better movie, you needed the lady from the second one to come back.
That's true. That's very true. But yeah,
this was like the scramble they came up with when they're like they found out the lady wasn't coming back.
Yeah, and this is starting that, you know, one a year, which doesn't generally work for horror movies. You can, if you do one a year, you start going downhill really fast. I think this is kind of showing template of that. All right, anything else you want to add before I close this out?
Nope.
All right, so our month-long look at Friday the 13th franchise continues next week, and we'll start with the final chapter, A New Beginning, in Jason Lives, as I'm going to call it the Tommy Jarvis Trilogy. Because he's the closest thing we have to a recurring protagonist in this franchise. But don't worry, the taglines will just keep getting better as we go along. So stay tuned all month long. And we'll see if anyone can keep machete-wielding hockey player down. Because it gets bad before it gets better. I know that. But remember, we watch bad movies, so you don't have to. And this has been Graveyard saying, have you checked in the children?
This is Salem saying, long live the new flesh.
Good night.